Welcome to the Build Up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Welcome along to the Build Up podcast in association with Ladbrokes, where we here on Balls.ie build you up to the sporting weekend. Get hyped for everything that's coming up. This week, it's all about Killincare against Blackhill in the Ulster Junior Football Championship, Mick. Man. We're going to have Stephen Ferris on to talk about it. We're going to have Jason Quigley, Morris Brosnan and Sean Meehan. Everybody in the studio getting hyped. Sorry, yes?
I'm sorry. That's not actually on the running order. I'm looking at it here.
I have a different one to you.
It's a Junior Ulster Club semi-final, is it?
Yes.
That you're playing in.
Well, right. I'll be togged out anyway.
Yeah, sorry. It cutting room floor, I'm afraid. We'll have to talk about the other stuff.
Well,
World Cup final and stuff, you know.
What sport's that in?
Oh, just, it's just rugby.
We've been doing some.
Yeah. He's actually a former rugby player,
yeah,
you see.
Yeah.
I know he's from Ulster and he's interested in the Ulster semi-final of the Junior Championship.
Armagh. Cross Midland and Clontibret afterwards.
No, it's just that it's the World Cup final.
All right, sorry.
And there's some other stuff as well. There's like an FAI Cup and that made the cut. And
I'm seeing here Katie Taylor is fighting against...
Pretty big, you
Christina
know.
Christina Linardo too. We should talk to Jason Quigley about that.
Yeah, and maybe the fact that Canelo is fighting this weekend as well. You know, sorry, like, I mean, we did... Look, me and the army of the backroom team here, the producers, researchers, directors, editors, we were scratching out things. We got rid of a lot, Mark.
Shit.
But Killincare was the last to go, I'm sorry.
Look, that's the way
good
it
luck
is.
With it, though.
Morris is coming in to talk about GEA, though. And
Sorry. It's just that, like, I mean, we kept the GEA slot just to keep Killincare in there. But then we had, like, Curragh Finn going to a draw a couple of weeks ago, screwed you
the
there.
Kerry
because
game as well.
Yeah, and then we have the Kerry County
Dublin
final. Tipperary Hurling,
oh,
you
shame.
Know, sorry.
So we'll be talking about us next week when we're in the final, huh? Wait, no, sorry, that's not what I meant to say.
Dressing room wall.
The guys are doing really well. You know, just working hard for each other.
Take
and
each
it's going to be a very, very, very tough task on Saturday evening. And the guys are just really
looking forward to it. You've snuck this onto the running order here.
So yes, as we mentioned, Stephen Ferris will be on in just a few minutes to chat about the Rugby World Cup final. Jason Quigley will be previewing a massive weekend of boxing. There's three big fights happening. Morris is going to hang around for that. Morris Brosnan, he will be in to talk about GEA as well. And Sean Meehan's going to be in the studio to talk about the FAI Cup final between Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers on Sunday. The two best teams in the country in the staple final for the biggest day in the domestic Irish calendar.
Should we throw in a bit of 1-2-3 in there?
And a bit of 1-2-3 as well. We'll also have our big shout. Mick, you had a good run last week, but you came agonizingly close.
Let's talk about it later or now?
We'll talk about it later.
It's my turn.
This week, it's your chance to win two cakes in a sports biography if you can send us in a prediction for the sporting weekend that is 25-1 or greater. And if it actually comes off, you will win two cakes and a sports biography, the greatest prize in the history of online radio / podcasting. Mick, you'll also have your NFL picks later on in the show. You went 1-2 last week.
Yeah, first time I didn't go at least 2-1. I had a good year, so I've slipped to kind of 11-7 for the season. Still okay. Once I'm over 500, I'm going to be happy at the end of the year, but I do want to keep that buffer, you know. But Jesus Christ, I'll talk about it later, but the Panthers let me down in a big way. Just a 50-point defeat for them after picking them +5.
Last weekend, we had one incredible Rugby World Cup semi-final followed by possibly the worst game of rugby of all time, although it did get a little dramatic to it. It sucked you in. You were like, how am I still sucked into this?
The fact that it was a draw with 5 minutes to go meant it made up for it.
Yeah.
Quality completely, but Jesus, Mary and Joseph. You can listen to me and Morris moan about that on the World and Union podcast that was posted on Tuesday if you want to get into more of that. And obviously we'll talk to Stephen about it as well.
To say, yes, it's not the final that Stephen or many people predicted in terms of the fact that England have gotten through. It's England against South Africa. Let's chat to Stephen now and get his thoughts on it. Stephen, I suppose the first question that we have going into this World Cup final is that England produced one of the best performances we've seen in international rugby in living memory on Saturday against New Zealand. I've seen Warren Gatland in the media this week saying that, you know, sometimes a team will produce a performance in a semi-final and it's really that's their final performance and they aren't able to get up to those levels again in the final. Do you think that could be an issue for England, or are they now, in your eyes, the firm favourites for this match?
Yeah, I think they're the firm favourites for me anyway. I'm not sure too many people would disagree with me. But I think over the last 18 months, what has England been a little bit vulnerable with? It's maybe backing up a really good performance with another really good performance. But something just tells me that this English team are starting to get cooking now. And I don't know if you guys have been watching it, the kind of documentary with it's called The Rising Suns, and it's kind of in-depth.
It's in camp.
Yeah, really, really good. And it kind of gives you an idea of their pre-season, the mentality, what they've been working on. And, you know, it seems to be like Eddie Jones has kind of put a game plan, tactics in place for like Six Nations 2 years ago. And then, like, as soon as it's over, he rips it up and he starts afresh with another idea or another set of tactics. And then, as soon as that's over, he rips it up and all to be picking for a Rugby World Cup, so that everything he's tried and tested over the last 2 or 3 years with all the tactics, team meetings, scheduling, you know, putting the lads under pressure at certain times, giving the guys time off. And he's kind of put his head together and come up with the right plan. And that plan at the minute seems to be working. And if anything, England seem to be getting stronger, where everybody else in the competition seems to be getting weaker. So, or everybody else that's fallen out of the competition as the tournament went on seems to have got weaker. So, I can't look past an England victory after the performance that South Africa gave us in the second semi-final. But yeah, England to me are really well placed at the minute, and I totally disagree with Warren Gatland and saying that their best game was last week, because you know, they'll be obviously talking about putting in their best performance this week.
It's funny, you actually picked England with the spread last week. I'm not 100% sure if you thought that they would get over the line, but we knew England were kind of going to live with the All Blacks anyway. But to see them kind of dismantle them in the way that they did, and really, like Mark was saying there, one of the best performances you've ever seen. The scoreboard didn't reflect how much they absolutely dominated the game. Like, for you, for me, and like, you know, as a back row, I'd always ask you, like, even the Morris was saying yesterday, like, you know, is that one of the most complete back row performances of all time between the three lads and all of the impact they had? There was so much that England did that was just on a completely different level than anything we've seen, definitely in this World Cup anyway, and probably for a long time.
I think so. And again, I kind of go back to the physical shape and condition of the guys and the, you know, the shape that they're in. It just seems like night and day compared to where Ireland are. And if you look at like Sam Underhill, you look at Tom Curry, you look at Wilson coming off the bench, you look at Big Billy Vinopolo, and then it's a complete contrast to what Ireland or, you know, even Scotland and, you know, teams that you would say have had traditionally really good back rows over the last couple of years. And again, it's just about peaking at the right time. And I just feel like physically they're on a different level from anybody else in the competition. That's not just fitness, that's strength. That's their physical mentality that they seem to approach games with and try and outdo the opposition in every single asset of the game. So I just think you're right. When it comes to the back row, it's about laying down markers, about big game-changing moments. You know, that tackle on Jordy Barrett that Sam Underhill put in, where he, you know, Jordy Barrett then spilled the ball. And it's just moments like that that really, you know, give your teammates energy, and they all feed off it. It was a complete performance, and one that I thought probably, like yourself, deserved a few more points on the scoreboard. But I think you gotta take your hats off to the All Blacks for kind of hanging in there. And you know, if they had finished off one or two line breaks in the first half, it might have been a different game. But you know, for me, it was just an absolute masterclass from Eddie Jones, who came under a lot of criticism with picking George Ford earlier on in the week. But him and Owen Farrell, the kicking game that they used, putting the ball in behind Sevy Reese and Bridge, George Bridge, it was just really, really good. They didn't play any rugby in their own half and just squeeze the life out of New Zealand. So who's going to say they're not going to do the same to South Africa this weekend?
Yeah, I think when you see players like the likes of Ben Youngs and George Ford and these boys coming into the best form of their career in the latter stages of the World Cup, you definitely kind of start to scratch your head as how other countries can do that and not us. But we're not going to talk about Ireland today, Stephen. We promised ourselves. We've sworn that we won't.
Good.
Now, I did want to ask though, as in, like, look, South Africa will have their own issues, and they, you know, were poor in a lot of ways on Sunday themselves. But looking at England, did you see anything that Razzie Erasmus will and the whole staff will kind of target or look to sort of say, you know what, here's where the All Blacks had some success, there wasn't much, or here's what the All Blacks didn't do well. Like, there must be a way. There's always a crack in, and there's always a chink in the armor somewhere, you know. Is there any chance that South Africa can exploit that?
I think if you look at the England defence, the way they defended any of the New Zealand's multi-phase possession, where you know, Manu Tuilagi get up on the line and shut it off, or Henry Slade when he come on, shut the passing channels down. And something that South Africa are generally pretty good at is keeping it tight, getting around the corner and punching holes. And whether that's 1 or 2 metres out from the ruck, a bit like Ireland have been doing over the last year, because they do have that firepower to be able to do that. And then when they do get in behind England, then that's the time to strike. It just felt like New Zealand were trying to strike too early all the time. And like, I think watching back and doing a bit of analysis on South Africa versus Wales, I actually, that is the way to, for me to break down England, is to punch short holes in them. But I don't think South Africa could do it. And the reason for it is because they look lazy, they look lethargic, they look like none of the forwards wanted to get around the corner and get the ball. And the way they're attacking, like the try that they scored was just off a bit of off-the-cuff brilliance by Leroux, who changed the direction of play and ended up, Dan Biggar missed a one-on-one. But apart from that one-on-one missed tackle, they offered absolutely nothing apart from kicking the leather off the ball. Now, are we going to see something similar? I think with the South Africans, they'll kick the ball much deeper than New Zealand did and try and pin this England team back a little. But for me, it would be, if I was a forward and I was in the South African dressing room, I'd be talking about trying to punch holes a lot shorter and not playing in England's hands. And if you punch holes, you might get 1 or 2 half yards, and then before you know it, you might get a little penalty just to eke something out of your attack, and then you can build upon that. We all know the South African ball can be very, very strong. But again, it just looked lethargic at the weekend. It didn't seem like it had much buzz about it. And if they're going to get back to the way that they were, they're going to have to certainly talk about that. So, yeah, for me, keep it tight. Punch the ball a lot more, but it has to come down to work rate, and it has to come down to who wants it more. And South Africa have shown us that over recent years that they're capable of doing it. But, not, as I say there, not last week, said to me that they are going to do it this weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned their try. Like, one of the big things for me was that came off a penalty advantage. And, you know, they finally kind of showed what they could do when they just, you know, obviously it was missed tackle. And, you know, there was that little bit of ingenuity in there that they're just not trying any other time in the game. They're waiting for, like, and that's been, you know, a trend of the World Cup in general to kind of like play off the penalty advantage. But South Africa in particular are so conservative. You know, it's very hard to see how they're just going to change that around if they need to, if they're playing from behind to England this weekend.
Yeah, but like, even on that penalty advantage, Megan, like if you looked, as soon as there's an overhead shot of Faf de Klerk when he picks the ball up, Leroux comes back down the short side, and there's like three big forwards just standing in the line offering absolutely nothing. There's two forwards on the other side standing in a line offering absolutely nothing. And this is like, this is in the 22, this is prime attacking position, and it just looked like, alright, well, you know, what are we going to do? Where England, when they get the penalty advantage, they seem to go into third, fourth, and then bang, they fire it into fifth gear, and everybody kind of gets more and more and more energy, where South Africa seem to be the opposite. South Africa, for me, would look like a team that would rather defend than attack, which isn't going to win you a World Cup against England, who are one of the best attacking team in the tournament. So, it was a little moment of genius switching it back, but they have to give us more than that in the final. And maybe with Cheslin Colby, who has been one of the stars of the tournament, maybe a little bit of magic thrown into the South African team is exactly what they need to try and get themselves going.
Yeah, is that what you think it was down to, in terms of when you talk about the tactics even going into this weekend, where they're going to try and kick it deeper? The kicking was a big feature, obviously, of the game on Sunday, but not just the fact that both teams kept kicking it, but the actual quality of it, the standard of it, was really poor. And was that something that maybe you were saying it was down to laziness, or just wanting to know that they weren't too worried about going forward? It was just about trying to be set up well defensively.
But Mark, I think, like, the lads just don't kick the ball away because, oh yeah, there's nothing on. And like I said, it's an RTE on Saturday morning or Sunday morning. Like, they're giving advice and they're giving thoughts from Razzy Erasmus. He had wanted the lad to play like that. We all know through the Rugby Championship that this African team can play some fantastic rugby. We've seen a little bit of it in the first game against New Zealand. But this was their tactics. This is what they were doing to try and grind out a result. Like Pollard, literally around the halfway, played two phases and then hoof it up into the air and nothing kick. Hopefully nothing comes of it. And then like 2 minutes later, do exactly the same thing again. And I don't know about you guys, it was the most, one of the most frustrating matches I've ever watched. And, Wales actually could have sneaked it in the end if Patchell had taken a quick snap at a drop goal maybe four or five phases before he did. And we could be sitting here talking about Wales getting into a final. I actually think Wales might have given England a bit of a better match just because of the more local rivalry. But yeah, the Razzy Erasmus, Felix Jones, who has actually been given a lot of credit over this World Cup, who's helping out with their attack. Like, they showed absolutely no attack at the weekend. And to score points against England, you're going to have to come up with something better, something more strategic than what they did against Wales last weekend.
Yeah, we've got Colby back, but I think that might frustrate us more than anything else when he probably doesn't see any of the ball. Obviously, there is that hope for a little bit of magic from him. On that particular point, that we're not going to see the full extent of, say, somebody like Colby's potential, even in a World Cup final, while England at least have offered their potential and showed us a kind of their style of play. In general, right, as we kind of head into the last weekend of it, we'll be done with it next week by the time we kind of are on the show again. Has it been a disappointing World Cup for, like, obviously that game on Sunday, I think, is very, very fresh in the memory when I say this, so excuse me if I'm too much recency bias, but has it been a really disappointing World Cup for quality levels and maybe more so tactics than anything else?
I think early in the tournament, the humidity and the heat had so much more to do with the skill level of some of the early games, especially, some of the bigger teams were really, really struggling. But I think as the tournament went on, the shining light that Japan were during the tournament, the fluidity that they played with, it just kind of sort of said, wow, this is the way rugby should be played, and this is hopefully the way the game is going to go going forward. And then, a really disappointing semi-final at the weekend kind of brings everybody back down to ground again, as if, this is what test match rugby is. This is what everybody's been used to over the years with test match rugby, just kind of eke out that one-point win or that three-point win. And I think, there were some fantastic rugby played during the group stages and even in the quarterfinals. But fingers crossed, people remember this tournament for some of the great rugby that was played. The quarterfinal, New Zealand beating Ireland, the way Japan came through their group and the standard of rugby that they played. England, the way that they've controlled themselves over the last 2 weeks. And even go back to Uruguay beating the Fijians. And one of the best matches that I think I watched was the Wales versus Fiji game. The line breaks, the intensity. And as you rightly say there, people tend to quickly forget those matches and kind of concentrate on the here and now. So fingers crossed, guys, that this Rugby World Cup final is one that everybody can look back on in the next 2 or 3 years and say, wow, what a game of rugby. What a physical encounter. The ball wasn't played for long periods of time. Both teams had a real go. Instead of being 9-9 and somebody hitting a drop goal in the last 3 or 4 minutes to win it. Everybody wants to kind of remember this final as some of the other games were played earlier on in the tournament.
England and Ladbrokes are 4-9 to win it. South Africa are 2-1. I imagine you're going over for England to win it. But in terms of a winning margin, what are you looking at?
Yeah, well, I think the handicap's 4 or 5 points. I got it wrong last week with South Africa and Wales, but I didn't realise that South Africa weren't going to get off the bus until the 76th minute. There's a lot, obviously, everything's on the line here, and I think England are going to win. I think they're going to beat the handicap of 4 or 5 points, but yeah, everybody's talking about 5 points. I think everybody is under the impression that England are going to run away with this. But you know, it's a World Cup final. They might get edgy. They might get a little nervy. You know, a couple of refereeing decisions might go against them. Jerome Gar says a huge talking point this week leading up to the match. So yeah, I think England are going to beat the handicap, but you know, I think, you know, between 5 and 9 points, victory for England would be where I'd be pitching that.
Yeah, 6 to 10 point win for England is 4 to 1 on Ladbrokes, so that's definitely good value there. Stephen, hopefully it lives up to, as you were, to all your hopes, as you mentioned there, that it actually ends up being a brilliant final that we remember this World Cup for. Although we all had hoped Ireland would go further into it, that at least this England team have actually given us something to get excited about, because that was a brilliant performance last weekend. And if we can get the same kind of game this weekend, it should be great.
Oh, it should be awesome. I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it. I know everybody's talking about this third, fourth, fifth playoff as a bit of a, you know, a no game in certain ways, but I'm actually looking forward to seeing that as well. And, you know, the Kiwis are massive, massive favourites. And I think they'll be pressing the team up. There might be a few changes all right in that. And then obviously the final, the big showdown Saturday morning. I'll be working on that. So buzzing for it, absolutely buzzing for it. And you know, as an Irishman, you know, you always kind of have a bit of, you don't want to see England do that well. And, you know, obviously they're massive rivals and all the rest of it. But I think deservedly, England probably deserve to win this World Cup and what they've shown in the competition so far. But it's all on the day, lads. I've been there myself. I've been there in big games, and whoever pitches up wins the match. So best of luck to both teams, and may the best team win.
Cheers, Stephen.
Cheers, boys. Thanks a million.
Great stuff there from Stephen. We should mention that Ladbrokes have got a super price boost on both the Rugby World Cup bronze final on Friday and, of course, the final on Saturday morning.
Stephen just mentioned there in the last thing, two things I wanted to talk about briefly, right? And I need your help with one of them in particular, right? Yeah. So people who will have listened to World and Union yesterday with myself and Morris will have heard the moral quandary and dilemma that I am in at the moment, where my instinct, every fibre of my being, is telling me that given the games I've watched in this World Cup, I want England to win this match.
I literally caught myself. Stephen mentioned it at the end, and when I was asking the last question there, I was like, well, you know, it's been disappointing for Ireland, but at least England have given us, and then I almost said the words to cheer about, and I had to pull myself back. And I was like, what I meant was that that performance, you could not but sit back and admire them on Saturday. Yeah. Like, this is mental.
Now, I don't want to make this sound like any kind of like anti-English madness or like, you know, some sort of weird kind of post-colonial republicanism or anything like that. It's nothing to do with that. I'm talking about it as a sports fan. Something I find very near and dear to my heart, all right? I don't want a Manchester United fan saying, I hope City win the league. I don't need the hatred and the vitriol. If they win it, I'll applaud them and say, well done. You can never want them to do it. You have to have a little bit of tribalism in it. And if you're an Irish sports fan, in this case rugby, if you're an Irish rugby fan, the team you never want to see win has to be England, because they're the big brothers. They're the team that are always going to have more resources, and they're always going to be the big win for us, and so on and so forth. So I find it very, very difficult to ever want them to do anything. However, the rugby has persuaded me in this thing that in this tournament that I think I'd prefer to see them do it than South Africa, who have literally bored the arse off us. Even when Japan, there was a point in the quarterfinal where I think it was only 6-3 or something like that, 5-3 it was to South Africa, and Japan were playing such scintillating rugby. I was like, this is the best game I've ever seen. And what did South Africa do? They choked the life out of it and ended up winning the medal. But they didn't do it because they answered with good rugby. They just literally took the life out of the game, and the last 50 minutes of that game weren't worth watching. It was awful, and it was a terrible game on Sunday. So why would I want them to win? But then Morris also pointed out, what about when I turn on Sky Sports News straight after it, or when I read the Sunday Times or something out? Like, you know, there is that post England victory.
Eddie Jones, gloat for, but like,
I like Eddie Jones.
I would say Eddie Jones, though, if you'd love him to be your head coach. he's that kind of perfect wrestling style.
You're no help at all. You're not giving me an answer here.
I don't have an answer, because I'm caught the exact same thing. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, for the good of rugby, England should win this match.
Yes.
And is that greater than just the good of us going, ha, England lost?
I don't know.
I think it's starting to overtake it. Like, I got on
in 2007, I very, very much wanted South Africa to win that tournament because that was a poor England team. And it wasn't an amazing, it was a terrible tournament. It wasn't a great South Africa team either. But England had, like, it was a ridiculous that team was in the World Cup final. It was only because France couldn't pull their pants up in the semi-final against them, like, you know. But this time they deserve it. This time they're the best team in the world. And they showed that last week. And I think in 2003, I almost had the opposite. And when I was cheering for for Australia all the way through, and then when they won, I was like, fair play to them. This is a likeable bunch of guys. I've changed my mind on that now a few years later, but this is a likeable English team.
Yeah.
You look at players like the Vinopolas, maybe, you know, you can take different parts of their history and decide whether you like them or not. But definitely a Toji.
Yeah, Underhill, if he was, again, he's all the hallmarks of a classic Irish back row with it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. It could have been a Welsh second row. But look, if he was Curry and Underhill, the young lads, and the, you know, you've got Owen Farrell. I talked to Morris about him. He's the classic example because you see Owen Farrell and you automatically think of him as this kind of hate figure, you know? But then you listen to him do his interview afterwards and he's in this kind of like thick Wigan accent, not exactly what you'd expect from a English rugby international. You go, he's kind of sound like, isn't he?
Mick, we're going to have to stop. We're getting too much.
Okay,
we'll be putting on England jerseys in a minute.
We won't be. The other thing that I wanted to talk about then, and actually you alluded to it there, the bronze medal final called. I don't know when that became a thing and not turning four place better. World Rugby loved that kind of thing. Have you ever heard, like, Stephen actually said he was looking forward to their maybe thing twice, but at the same time, I think this might be the worst fixture in world sport.
Hanging around for an extra week for no reason other than to play this game.
Your heart has been broken. And if you look at the two specific teams
lads,
this week in Wales and New Zealand.
On both teams, coaches and players waiting to retire.
Yeah.
And they have to hang around to do this.
Yeah.
Then maybe it'll be nice to give them a send off. Wales have never beaten New Zealand, so like they will be up to Gatland and Watmore.
Gatland's never beaten them. Yeah.
So,
but, like, it's rugby though. Like, that's what you can get yourself, if you hang around in the Football World Cup for the extra 3 or 4 days and you kind of say, oh, look, there's loads of reasons. It'll be a goodbye to our legendary player who's retiring and their coach can say goodbye and all. You can get it. You can kind of half arse a game of football. You know, nobody cares about it, but it might end up
you'll have Apre match doing the analysis.
It might end up being 4-3 and there's a bit of crack in it, you know, and, you know, people will get into it. Nobody cares about this match. Nobody wants to watch it. And the players definitely don't want to be there. And it's very hard to go out for 80 minutes and tackle your arse off and jump headfirst into the rooks. I don't get it. I don't see what the point of it is.
Look, Mick, it is all the hallmarks of a friendly, but given that it's on the 1st of November, we all know there are no friendlies against New Zealand in November. So this is a really important game. And if Wales do win it, it'll be a massive deal for Warren Gatland. It'll be documentaries made about it.
Well, you know what? Gatland beating New Zealand, the only thing he hasn't done as Welsh coach, except for win the World Cup, might be a good way to end it.
Yeah, but look, whatever about it, I hope the final surpasses expectation and we get a great game on Saturday. Let's get Morris Brosnan in the studio. We're going to talk about GAA and also talk about boxing with Jason Quigley. Morris Brosnan is back in the studio to talk GAA and boxing later on, but GAA first, Morris. If we see another draw, I don't know where to turn. There's draws every left, right and centre in all these county finals.
Yeah, we still can't pick them.
No.
Like kissing your sister.
Last week I predicted that one would be a draw and the one that I didn't predict, I said one of them replays is going to end up being a draw again and the one I didn't go for was the one that ended up being in terms of the Donegal final, which has gone to yet another replay.
But I tell you, there was one draw fucking ruined my big shout. We'll talk about that.
Well, you can talk about it here. It's all right. You don't have to keep teasing them. It was Dr. Croke's pick, wasn't it?
It looked like I was in for the two cakes in the sports biography for the first time in history. And Dr. Croke's went and only they were 1-4 and they were lucky to get a draw.
Yeah, very lucky.
In the end. Now, they weren't lucky to get the extra time, which was what killed me in the first place. Because it has to be, obviously, a 60-minute result. But South Kerry, young lads, you never underestimate the unknown. in a Kerry County Championship, that's what I'd say.
Especially now that in Kerry you've got divisional teams who just look incredibly strong everywhere. So like that, as you mentioned, it took Tony Brosnan like at the very end to score a goal to save Crokes. So that game has been replayed this weekend. Crokes, interestingly enough, by the way, are still 1-4 for that game.
You'd imagine, I was going to say this, that that idea of the team, the underdog, having their chance the first day, because there's a big kind of situation on that in both the Kerry game and also then in Galway. The Galway final,
yeah,
the replays on with Cora Finn and Tune. So, I'd imagine Cora Finn again are big favourites for that.
Yeah.
And probably rightly so.
I think Cora Finn are slightly different in that they've got three huge players coming back into their team there. So, they've got Michael Lundy, who looks he's going to be back fit. Kieran Fitzgerald, who still tearing it up in the club championship, is coming back as well. And obviously, Burke is back in midfield there too. So, they're three massive, the three they're top five players there.
I think in general, though, that's a sign of a kind of a competition that you only learn about by seeing it.
Very true, yeah.
The natural thing with that is to trust the two teams that were in the All-Ireland final last year that it was a slip-up. And that's what, when you're setting odds, you're going by what the chances are. And the chances are that's true. But ultimately, it doesn't, in a sport that's studied to the nth degree, like the Premier League or something like that, you're not going to have more knowledge than the bookies. But in this case, it's not that you have more knowledge, it's just that we don't know yet. We don't know whether South Kerry are as good as Crokes or whether they just were in the 60 minutes, because they only can reveal that in the course of a county championship, you know? It's the beauty of a kind of a competition like this, really.
And there's so many other factors to bring into play. And one of them actually I want to talk about, I don't know where you're seeing value in the market on Ladbrokes this week, Mara. So one place there's one match that isn't up yet because the second replay is only happening. We're recording now on Wednesday afternoon. This only happened tonight with Glenties against Gwydor. The winner of that plays Castlerahan, the Cavan champions, in the Ulster quarterfinal on Sunday. If it goes to another replay, the Dublin final or the Donegal final, I think that has to, you were saying it might be played on Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
And then possibly they have to play again on Sunday. So Castlerahan have had the perfect preparation for this. And this is something when it comes to provincial level that you can't underestimate. It's the build-up time, the fact that whoever wins this match tonight, Wednesday night, Donegal, have to celebrate, get back to training and get ready again for a game on Sunday. Now, I don't know what they'll do, if they'll postpone the celebrations and just maybe wait until Sunday evening or whatever. But if maybe that'll happen if it's Gwydor, if it's Sir Conley, I don't know. Or Name Conley, I should say. But either way, for Castlerahan to have they've won their county final, second county final in a row, so they've got all the celebrations over them. All their talk after the game and even before the county final was about how they felt they didn't do themselves justice last year in Ulster. They were kind of celebrating for their first win ever in a first ever county championship. So that is one I would be keeping an eye out on, because they're massive outsiders. They're 25-1, I think. They're the rank outside team to win Ulster, but at the same time, they've got the ideal preparation going into it.
In terms of team, yeah. Do you know Mick, you were saying off air in a separate conversation about it got to a stage where you heard that Leicester were 7-0 up last weekend and decided to turn on then. There's something about we talked about how dreadful the Donegal Championship has been, both the first game and the replay. Once it goes to a third replay,
you wouldn't be getting 7-0 in the Donegal County Championship. It's far too high score.
I think once it gets to a third, potentially a fourth replay, it kind of becomes that infatuation where you're like, I'll pay the fiver to watch this, just because how many times can they keep doing this? How many times can replay again? So I probably will watch that game tonight.
So this is now the third match.
This is the third. If it goes to a so the way Donegal Championship works is that it's opt-in. The rules are opt-in. So Gwydor look like they were happy enough for it to be decided on the night. Neve Connell aren't. So that game will, if it is a replay, you're looking at a replay on Saturday for a game that'll be played on Sunday. That'll be the fourth replay if it does go to Saturday. I kind of wanted to go to a replay as well, just for the shit. A fourth replay, I think, would be incredible.
Or a fourth match, like a third.
Yeah,
so that's
third replay. Sorry,
I could be wrong about this, but the only time I remember that ever happening in GA is the Dublin Mead games in 91.
Yeah,
you know, there's been a lot of trilogies, but has it ever been a draw again? Why do you think, I can understand Gwydor wanting to end the night and the Ulster Championship might be more important to them, but if you're Niamh Connell, I think sometimes you just win your county championship, don't mind, I'd nearly forfeit Ulster. And not lose on a penalty shootout.
Don't do that.
I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Yeah, that's definitely what I'd be thinking in terms of that.
I think Down did that before they played, ended up fixing a county final, a replay for the Sunday when the Ulster, and they end up not being able to go ahead in Ulster as well.
Don't quote
me on that, but
I think it's a fair enough thing, but it will be different for Gwydor, who would have different ambitions because they're further down. Further down the line, you know. But I do also think like there's a fine line in what Mark's talking about there. It's like, all right, maybe you postpone the celebrations and you go out on the Sunday. But like, what if you lose on the Sunday? You never get that high of winning your county title. And it's funny because it doesn't. Everything doesn't need to be about drink either. And that's a problem almost with GAA is that like we've won a match now. We should be allowed to go drinking for 6 days if we want, you know. But I don't even mean that. I just mean what are we doing it for, in a way?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, when's enough?
Just celebrate it.
So if you go and win after three matches and two replays, you go and win tonight, and then you have a match on Sunday, it's like, it's a slog. No matter what way you look at it, it's like, I can't even enjoy winning the cup.
Yeah,
like,
celebrations aside, just mentally trying to prepare yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
And the other thing is,
that's what I mean. It's not even the drinking, it's to go back training on Friday night. Like, you know, it's like, what? What is it for?
The other thing is, though, it could have the positive impact, maybe, that they're just still on a high. They're after playing three matches. Like, it's that thing of, we were talking about it even in the World Cup, I mean, the Rugby World Cup to Stephen Ferris a couple of weeks ago, make of, like, do you want games or do you not want games to get you know, into the ideal preparation for it? So, like, another way of looking at it is, Casarahan haven't played a game in 3 weeks. Whoever wins this game will have played three in the space of 11 or 12 days, so that they could be just, you know, don't need a train later on in the week and just go in and just roll on to the next one.
Which, funnily enough, leads me on to my pick for the next week, right?
Go on.
Because, like, what all along, I think we've talked about the idea of picking based off maybe names, reputations, and not looking at context. So, in the Connacht Championship this weekend, you've Turlough Strachan, they're playing Park Pierces. Now, Park Pierces are Roscommon champions. They have the three dailies, David Murray, Hubert Darcy, Pat Flanagan, the former Offaly manager, is over them this year. All looking pretty rosy there. Then, you think about it, right? Turlough Strachan are at home. Turlough Strachan have won four of the last county championships in Sligo and have been in the final for this. So of those four, for the last 12 successive years, they've been playing the finals. They've won four. They're the most successful team in Sligo coming off. So this is Park Pierce's first time in a county championship, and Turlough Strachan are at home.
And I think, so did they play the week before?
They played on the 10th. So they've a 2 week gap now. No more. Yeah, sorry, a 2 week gap now. They also have, they bet Coolishad Hill in their final, friend of the show. That was a good team. Niall Murphy was on that team as well. They've got Liam Gogan, the Sligo forward, who one of their few kind of bright sparks for the intercounty season this year. I think that at 11-8, there's value there. Given all of that stuff, like, think about it. Like, Mick, you said a second, what you said there is so true. Four county titles in a row, their context, their targets have totally changed after that compared to Park Pierces, who like only naturally would have exploded after winning their first county title. Like,
first team, you make the breakthrough, you very rarely do anything in the province. No, it's not unheard of. Sometimes you can do what you're talking about, Mark, and just go on this ride the crest of the wave all the way through. But sometimes it's just too much. Like, it's too much of a slump to go back into it again. Like,
in that context, I think 11-8 is generous for Turlough Strachan.
It's also kind of similar to the story we were talking a few weeks ago about Derry Gonley against Cargan, where that game had gone to a replay. All right, Cargan had won last year, but it was that thing of that it kind of wears you down. And Derry Gonley had won a few in a row and had experience at provincial level, a bit more experience, so like it just can carry over the line. Again, sometimes we're going, these teams have probably never played each other in their history before, so it's hard to always call it. But one other game, actually.
Good logic, though.
Yeah, exactly. So that's if you're looking at something like that. And then one other game as well that we must mention is the Dublin County Final, because we were here last week. We went, right, well, Kilmacud, they're going to beat Thomas Davis, definitely. Bit of a question mark over Ballyboden and St. Jude's, but yeah, Ballyboden will win that. Turns out Thomas Davis were the best of any of them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, in kind of incredible circumstances, like a Thomas Davis team that have no outside players and no outside manager, and you look at Kilmacud.
Only come up from Senior 2, won Senior 2 last year.
Last year, yeah.
This is the first year back up in Senior.
Absolutely. And like, I think that you can't use the same logic that we just used for this context, because like, of course, like their nirvana there is the county final. Like, it's a win that, so it's not as if they're happy to be at this stage to any stretch of the imagination. Like, I think that in those circumstances, I'm not sure, to be honest. Yeah. If
like, they're 9-2, which is a bit on Ladbrokes, so it's a big price,
huge price.
Yeah, I'd like Ballyboden is a weird one though as well, because how good or how bad have they been in that? Like, they struggled against the Jutes, obviously, they came back and won it. They could have lost against the Fina, but, you know, yeah, won after extra time. So they're getting, they're 14 getting, just about getting Fina, over the yeah line. But at the same point, that's a really tough side of the draw, and this could be standards at the moment. If they get through this again at the weekend, like, you'd have to be, you wouldn't rule them out for another.
Here's the question, though, and it's not, again, it's not like the team who has the upset is going to do it again, but would you fancy Kilmacud against Bowden? If it was,
that's the thing.
You know, I think you would, like, and so they 100% have a chance. That's a big price.
Yeah.
It's a big, big price.
Like, comfortable,
you know,
win for Thomas Davis.
I would say the thing about Thomas Davis for me and the story of it, the no outside players, no outside manager, that's all brilliant. But for me, it would scare the shit out of me if you're someone that's hoping for a Dublin faltering in the future. Yeah. It's not even, it's just that's how strong football is in Dublin at the moment, is that a team with, you know, I don't know, do they have any county players?
No,
like,
really.
No county players, not really, maybe some on the fringes, but, you know, that you're looking, that, and like, this is a club that wouldn't even been on the radar, and they're going into the county final this week, like, you know, and there's just so many have fallen that have those two or three great players, but it's not about the top 30 players that are in Dublin. There's 200 or 300 at this stage that could nearly make an impact at inter-county level. Like.
And Davies as well, like, on that logic as well, like, they've, this is not as if this was, you know, for them totally out of the blue. Like, they, early this summer, everyone was talking about when they bet Brian Howard, Brian Fenton, Raheny team and overcame then. They've now toppled the joint as well. Like, they, it's not as if this was a one-off, you know, out of the blue moment. Like, they have shown there's been a form line there. That now, at the same time, Kilmacud did lose Mannion early, and we saw the difference that he made the week before.
Kieran Sullivan injured as well, so yeah, there is that. It's not a full strength Kilmacud, but still,
it's a big price.
It's an interesting fight. And if the finals, or if, like, in fact, if you've got a final replay or whatever, it's probably, you'd imagine Cora Finnan going over the line there. So this is probably the hardest to call for football finals this weekend.
Mm.
In terms of the hurling, then, there's not much on, but you've got the Tipperary County Final, which is what we describe, I suppose, as a novel pairing.
Yeah, Bursley and Killadangan, which is, that's it. I don't know too much about it. I'm not going to be looking at picking a winner or anything like that, because I don't know enough about teams, but it's one of the, we're talking about, like, Thomas Davis, you know, being shown the strength and depth of Dublin. The strength and depth in Tip Club Hurling is unbelievable. You could have anyone in the final any given year. And these are, you know, it's not unheard of for Bursley to be in there. You know, they were a big team in the 80s. They've been knocking around. But Killadangan, like, small, small place and kind of great to see as well. And that's actually going to be a brilliant match in Turles. I think that's one to kind of watch. And just, again, to sort of the strength and depth in the other All-Ireland champions, county, you know, in Tipperary is actually very, very underrated. This isn't unusual for a team that people in the wider country mightn't have heard of to kind of reach the county final.
Definitely,
you know?
It should be a hell of a game. But look, at lads, we have to get on to talk about boxing. There's a massive weekend for boxing fans in general, but particularly Irish fans, with Katie Taylor fighting. So let's chat to Jason Quigley. Jason, it's a big weekend in boxing. We'll start obviously with Katie Taylor against Christina Leonardo too. This is Katie going up in weight, looking to become a two-weight world champion. This could be a brilliant, brilliant night for Irish boxing.
Yeah, this can be a fabulous night for Katie Taylor, and yet another milestone on Katie's career to date. You know, she's been phenomenal throughout her career, amateur and professional so far. And this is another major stepping stone for Katie Taylor on Saturday night. And I think she's gonna be on her game on Saturday night, because there's going to be a lot of people doubting her, and there's a lot of question marks over her last victory over Delphine Bersoon. So this is one now for Katie Taylor to get back in there. And we all know Katie, how determined she is, and she's going to put on a show come the weekend.
Is there any worry that she could end up in a situation like the Pursuit one? Leonardo too actually lost to Pursuit as well at lightweight before moving up. Is there any danger that Katie could get caught on the hop here?
I don't think so, not with Katie Taylor. You know, there's a lot of fighters out there that can blow hot and cold, but I think Katie Taylor is one of those top, top professionals that trains every day, works hard at everything, leaves no stone unturned, and I think Katie Taylor is going to go on, and I think Katie is going to be looking to put on a real show, a real masterclass now, and to show and to prove to all those doubters from her last fight that she is the real deal and set up another massive fight with Persoon.
Jason, I don't know if you saw Michael Caruth come out during the week there and say that he hopes that Taylor finishes after this fight, that she's achieved everything that she has. But just from your own perspective, like, I don't necessarily know if that's true. And I think that people might look at her and look at the fact that she's a world champion and now could potentially become a two-weight world champion. But then there's also, like, what this fight opens her up to. There's, you know, the possibility of fighting a catchweight against Celia Brankhurst. You can see the Amanda Serrano fight is still there. That could be a super fight on the other side of the States as well. Like, this does still feel like it's a rising Katie Taylor story.
Without a doubt, like, there's so many people can look in at Katie Taylor's career, and there's so many people that can give advice on Katie Taylor's career. But there's one thing that we don't know, and that's the goals and the targets that Katie Taylor has set for herself. And we all know Katie Taylor from the past, and she doesn't set no bars too low for herself. So I can't see her calling it a day after this fight. I think that she's going to set up two or three potential massive fights with a great performance in her next fight this weekend. And that is really going to stamp Katie Taylor's legacy in women's boxing, and I think that she can do that, and that is something that she's going to want to do, because we all know the type of her, how determined she is, how focused she is, and most importantly, how determined she is to be the best, to be the greatest woman boxer ever. This is a goal and an aim of Katie Taylor's that she wants, and I think that this fight now at the weekend is only really going to be a stepping stone to that legacy and to creating that greatness that Katie Taylor wants.
Katie walks around at 142 pounds. This fight's at 140. Is that an advantage that she doesn't have to make much of a weight cut, or is what's the ideal situation there?
Every human being is different. Every boxer is different. You know, there's some fighters that they can drop 10 to 15 pounds in weight, even more sometimes, depending on the length of period of the training camps and things like that and how much they blow up. And that can work for them mentally, thinking that I've dropped down so much weight, I'm so much more bigger and physically stronger. And there's some people that it takes a lot out of them mentally, dieting, training on an empty stomach, you know, things like that there can take a performance down a level for some fighters. I think for Katie Taylor, she's been an all-round professional in her career so far. She's had a massive experience throughout the amateurs, which you never really blew up too much in weight either. You were always a few kilos just over your weight division. And I think that this is going to suit Katie Taylor. You know, I think that this is going to be more toward the line that she was as an amateur. Not too much over her weight division, just boiling down nice and gradually before the fight, coming in strong, able to eat what she wants, when she wants. Be fully fueled up for training sessions, be fully fueled up for fight night, everything like that there. So I think this is going to work in Katie Taylor's favor because of the way that she's going to be able to keep fully hydrated, plenty of food in the system when she's training. I think that this training camp, because of the weight cuts, not that much, that is going to be been really a great training camp for Katie Taylor this time around.
You spoke of him earlier on, and speaking of moving up a weight class, Canelo Alvarez against Sergey Kovalev this weekend as well. Canelo's got up two weight classes. Could he be maybe taking on a little bit too much here?
Yeah, definitely. You know, this is why this fight is so interesting, because Sergey Kovalev is a massive light heavyweight. He's a big puncher. They call him the crusher for a reason, but everybody has seen in Kovalev's recent performances, not as great, not as good as he used to be. There's been a few stories out there and videos of him not living the life, getting pissed off every now and then. He's pushing on in age. Is he getting over the hill? So there's so many question marks in this fight that makes this so exciting. And then you have the likes of Canelo that is in his prime right now. I think Canelo's getting better with every fight. People think of Canelo Alvarez and they think of a strong, come-forward, tough fighter. But as we've seen with the likes of Golovkin, as we've seen with the likes of Jacobs, his head movement, his boxing skills, everything is really improving with Canelo. And I think it's going to take one hell of a performance from Kovalev or one hell of a punch from Kovalev to do the damage in Canelo. So this is going to be a very, very interesting fight. But I think, and I'm going to go with the younger, fresher, living the better life, Canelo Alvarez.
Just wondering, Jason, how big a deal Canelo is for boxing in general, because obviously you, like, you know, you've lived in the States for a few years there. You kind of know what it's like over there. We obviously get a lot of their media, but like, it seems to me that, you know, there's a boxing kind of media there that'll cover Golovkin and Lomachenko and all of these guys. But there's the general sports media kind of only really come alive for certain people. And to be honest, since Mayweather's kind of stepped off, Canelo's really the only guy there at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, Canelo's the king of boxing right now. He's the face of boxing right now. And I think that it's the way that he fights also. You know, he's a big puncher. He leaves men sleeping. You can see, in boxing, you get so many great, talented fighters, but if they don't have that knockout punch, if they don't have that punch to put somebody on their ass, it doesn't get the general public, the general fight fans excited. And Canelo has that. But I think also with the Mexican following, they're known to be such a proud country. They're very same as the Irish, I think. You know, the way that the Irish can get behind their fighters and everything like that, I think the Mexicans are very similar. And I think it, Canelo has the about four or five top ingredients to be the face of boxing. What he does have, as it is, the Mexican following, where he's from, the style of his fight, and who he's fighting. He's not ducking guys. He's getting in there, he's challenging himself, he's moving up and down the weights, he's fighting the best in the divisions, he's making the right moves at the right time, he's in his prime, and I think that Canelo Alvarez is the face of boxing, and deservedly so.
You're a good man now for these predictions. We've had you on a few times and you've been going well so far. I'm not going to ask you for Katie's because she's a massive favourite. Canelo is also a pretty big favourite here. He's 1-4 on Ladbrokes. But have you got any more of a detailed prediction here other than just the win, get better value here than 1-4?
Yeah, well, I think with Katie's fight, I think that Katie's going to go in there and I think that she's going to outbox us here now at the weekend. I think that I can't pronounce her name, so that's why I'm not saying it. So I think Katie Taylor's going to come away a unanimous decision victory, comfortable enough. There could be a few rounds where it gets a little bit close because of the weight difference and moving up in weight and things like that, but I think Katie Taylor will control this fight and won the unanimous decision. And then we have Canelo then against Krushchev Kovalev. I think that this fight, as I said already, I'm going to go with Canelo. I'm going to go with a points decision one for Canelo Alvarez. What's the possibility? And I'm only going with this because of Kovalev's last fight. Yard had him gone a few times. And I don't think Yard is anywhere near the capability that Canelo has. So I'm going to go with a unanimous decision victory for Canelo with the possibility of a late stoppage also.
Finally, I suppose, Jason, just a quick word on the undercard for Katie Taylor as well. We've got Anthony Corrala, who I think is kind of a testament to perseverance. He's one of the most likable boxers in the division, really, at the minute. It's kind of nice for him, isn't it, to see him get a night like this in Manchester to say goodbye to what was a pretty great career.
Yeah, I think this is the way that boxing should go. You know, boxing can be a very ruthless sport. It can just use you when you're in your prime and throw you out the window whenever you're past it or whenever your time's finishing up. But I think this is very good for Corrala now. I think he's going to get his one last dance on the dance floor now, and he's going to go in there, he's going to enjoy it, and I really hope he gets a good victory and can finish his career with a good victory, because everyone knows he's a lovely fella, he works hard, he's always been an underdog throughout his whole career. People says he wouldn't even win a British title, and he went on to become a world champion. So this is a great send-off for Anthony Corrala, and he deserves every bit of it.
Jason, we haven't talked to you since you announced that you've started working with Andy Lee. Just wondering how all that's going. How's your camp going? And when we're looking to see you in the ring again? I think we were talking early December last time.
Yeah, everything's been going great now. It's been me and Andy and Paddy Donovan are in training away, working our asses off every day. Everything's been going great. I'm enjoying it. I'm happy. You know, I'm a lot closer to home. Everything's starting to fall into place for me in those terms. And, you know, as I say, look, it's all about enjoying it. And enjoying it with a smile on your face, able to bite down in your lungs, you grit it out and put in the hard work also. And everything is blending lovely together now. Me and Andy's working great together. We have a great relationship from day one. I've always known Andy personally and did some commentating with him and asked for bits of advice even throughout my career when he was still boxing. And now to have this different kind of a bond added on to that, it's working great, you know what I mean? And it's all about now, as you said, still on for December 5th over in California and getting a good victory, a good performance, and now in December, and then pushing on and pushing for that world title again in 2020.
Cheers, Jason. We're all looking forward to it and looking forward to this weekend as well. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Nice one, lads. Cheers for having me.
Oh, feckin' Mick. Do you know what? I'm after forgetting to ask him to call the biggest fight of the weekend involving a boxer. Tyson Fury against Braun Strowman at WWE Crown Jewel on Thursday evening. Christ. Anyway, look at Canelo. He's given us a shout for Canelo the weekend to win.
Thank God he didn't ask me any questions there.
Canelo to win on points after going full distance 10 to 11 on Ladbrokes.com. It's 20 to 1 if you're looking at late round stoppages. Jason meant there 20 to 1 round 10, 25 to 1 round 11, 28 to 1 round 12. Take your pick there or put a euro on each of them and see how it comes off. If you are having a bet in the game, be sure to gamble responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for more information.
The bout
is right. We have kicked Morris Brosnan out of the studio and we're now joined by Sean Meehan, who's going to chat to us about the FAI Cup finals. He's going to get us hyped for that. But first of all, it's time for a big shout.
All right, hold it. Hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round. No, don't. Bloody.
Sean, welcome to the podcast studio.
Hello?
You look very confused.
I'm very nervous.
You're very nervous.
I'm very nervous.
It's your favourite weekend of the year. So, you know, it's your favourite day in Irish football of the year. So you're getting really excited.
Hey, dude, yeah. You know, it's always nice to see. Always nice to see the two teams fight out in the Aviva. The four teams, actually. This is a back-to-back. This is like GAA. This is like GAA, Mark. This is a double header.
Exactly. We'll get to that in a second. But the big shout, Mick, you were very close last week. Ferrari let you down. Dr. Crokes let you down. It's the first time anyone said that in a sentence, that Ferrari and Dr. Crokes let you down.
It's more the order of what happened, though. So we sat here, yes, and I was adamant that Bournemouth and Watford would be a draw. I actually even said nil-all draw, which would have meant I needed a little bit less in the big shout to get to the 25-1. But I wanted the 16, so I just said draw anyway, 5-2. That happened, and then I had Rory McIlroy top 20. You knew that was going to happen. A few others all came in, Wales plus 8, so on and so forth, Ballyhale. And then all I needed at this stage was Crokes, who were 4-1 on, and then Ferrari to win the Mexican Grand Prix, which was that night. Then Crokes drew, went to extra time. It was all shattered. I thought I was getting two cakes as well, but I'm just putting it out there that it's the closest anyone's come. Even closer than calling 6-0 in City and Watford and it being 8-0.
I was about to say, the only person that came anywhere remotely close to it is you when you had that other one. I also had, we're doing a weekly accumulator, a fivefold with Ladbrokes on our social media channels. Some of you might have seen it. For some reason, I'm still put rules on myself that you had to match specific criteria in that fivefold, and that you had to pick two teams to win from the Premier League weekend, a match to be a draw, have a bet in the over-under goals market in one of the games, and the both teams to score market. So at the weekend, I had Liverpool and Man United to win. I had Brighton and Everton, both teams to score. I had Wolves and Newcastle to be a draw. And then I had under 3.5 goals in Chelsea against Burnley. That was over 20-1 as well.
And I thought that match would be one off.
Let me down. Yeah.
Yeah, you did think it was going to be. It really wasn't. It was far from it.
It was a mad game, a mad game. But this week, anyway, look at. We go again.
It's my big shout this week.
My big shout this week.
Two cakes is supposed to. We're getting closer. It's going to happen.
We had a couple of entries last week as well that came, nowhere near. There was one guy, Paul Doyle, and he always is interesting picks, Paul. We've mentioned it before. The podcast, some of them always like, you know, Peterborough to win. Why have you gone for that? And then it didn't come off. They drew nil all, I think. But look, keep them coming in. Send them into us, thegaffer@balls.ie. If you get one right, if it's 25-1 or greater and it comes off, you will win yourself two cakes in sports biography. My one this weekend, I'm going with a big shout in a fourfold, and then the other three I think are more than likely to happen. Right, you've got Man City to beat Southampton at 1-12, a ridiculous bet to add into anything, but I needed to push me over the 25-1 threshold. Right,
that's not a big shout. Yeah,
there was an end to justify the means. Yeah. There. Yeah,
Leicester City to beat Crystal Palace away from home 11-10, I think is actually great odds for that.
Wow. Well, Palace aren't the easy bet, but anyway.
Yeah, but look, Leicester are on a roll. Leeds United against QPR. Under 2.5
draw.
Goals.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
23-20. Leeds have turned into the worst team in the world to watch play.
Little all draws, yeah.
And one all draws. And 1-0 wins to somebody. And then Thomas Davis to beat Ballyboden. That's the big shout at 9-2, which pushes this up over 25-1. So I'm into the big shout, you know, at 25-1 with the skin of my teeth, but and I need a big, big game from Thomas Davis. But after watching him at the weekend, and we talked about it on GA with Morris, I think they're capable of doing it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Look, I hope so. I actually think that would be amazing, and we'd have a winner at the big shout. And also, by the way, just it'd be absolutely awful of me not to point out that Leeds versus QPR is a match from 1994.
Oh, completely and utterly, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And look at
that. And the football will probably be from 1994.
I'd unfortunately be watching it as a Leeds fan, but the rest of you, I'd urge you to stay away from that game. put your bet on it for the big
Les
shout.
Les Ferdinand versus Brian Dean.
And then just walk away. But look at two games that we are looking forward to are the FAI Cup finals this Sunday. So let's get hyped about that. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if a strike, Sean, we talked about it on the football podcast earlier this week. This is your hot take for the week was that this is just going to be an incredible occasion.
It should be. Listen, you know, there's no guarantees, but you've got four teams here that. You know, there's no filler in these two matches. You've got Piemont, who won the Women's National League. Wexford Youth, who won it the season previous. They finished third this season. It was a bit of a disappointing campaign from them, but they're still a quality outfit. Now, to speak on that game in particular, I think Piemont have had an absolutely unbelievable season. They just beat Shells to the title by 2 points, but they only lost one match all season. And I reckon that it's going to be a double for them. I reckon that they're going to do it. Not to say that Utes are a bad team in any way, shape or form, but they did finish third this season and they finished way off both Shells and Piemont. But I just think Piemont will have enough for them this year. They didn't lose them at all this season. I know Wexford have the pedigree, but Piemont, they're going to pull out a bag.
For the men's final, it's going to go to extra time, I presume.
Well, it's either going to go to extra time or somebody's going to score in the last minute. Like, that's genuinely how it is. Dundalk are going to be without one of their talismen. They're going to be without Chris Shields, who picked up his 8th yellow card about 2 weeks ago for the season. But that means he's out of the FAI Cup final, which is frankly ludicrous.
You shouldn't be getting suspended. This is a bigger issue, right? And it's like, in fairness, 8 yellow cards is a lot, but it's a long season as well. But you know, like World Cups and Champions League and everything like that, you shouldn't be getting suspended for yellow cards. I don't think.
Yeah,
it's too big a punishment. If it's not a big enough punishment to get you off the field, you shouldn't be missing a full game for it.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
And plus, I think that if it was the last game of the season, maybe I could kind of understand it. But it was the week before.
He wasn't allowed to take the suspension early.
No, and he was like he would have, and Dundalk would have obviously taken it. They had to wait for the disciplinary committee to meet. But they meet after the final game of the season. Like it's preposterous. But anyway, Well, they're without him, so that means that Jack Byrne's going to have a, I'd say, an easier time of things, but, you know, Dundalk won the league at a canter eventually.
Yeah,
you know.
They had a very good game against each other a few weeks ago. Maybe it was about 6 weeks ago, was
it? Dundalk won the league that day. That was 3-2, which was a very high-scoring affair for these two teams. But it seemed as though when Rovers played at home against Dundalk, they're very tight affairs. And then when they go up to Oriel, it's slightly more open. This is going to be a cup final, so it's going to be cagey, definitely in the first half. Yeah. I think it'll be nil all going into halftime. And then the second half, it'll be up to Stephen Bradley, the Shamrock Rovers manager, to decide whether he wants to open up the game. Because it's not like he doesn't have players to do it. You know, he's got Ireland internationals all the way through the squad. He's got Cape Verde international that play in centre half now. You know, so it's not like he just has to have belief in his own players to actually want to go out and win this football match. Now, there's a lot riding on this. Rovers haven't won the cup in 30 years.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Which, like, I mean, they've won 24 of them and they haven't won it in 30 years. That's mad.
Yeah.
Whereas Dundalk, they've been winning it every season since Stephen Kenny decided to walk up in their club. Like,
yeah.
I was just looking at the past five finals. I was looking at like first half goals, just to make this point. In 2014, no first half goals. In 2015, no. 2016, no. 2017, no. 2018 was the only one in the past 5 years where there's been goals in the first half.
And they've always been like really exciting though.
That's and none last year.
Yeah.
This is 2019. Sorry, they've been really exciting. As in, they've been close though, haven't they?
I think, but even as nil-nils, there's always the threat of... I know that sounds ridiculous. There's always the threat of a goal, but they are genuinely... They're not boring nil all.
No, especially like considering the past four seasons, you've had the same two teams play out in the final.
Yeah.
And this year, again, is the top two, but
thankfully this year it's not Cork.
I'm sorry, but they knew what they had to do to win. And they did it quite well, especially against Dundalk in these big finals. But Rovers are going to have, like, Rovers have Jack Byrne, they have Graham Burke, they have Sean Kavanagh, they have players all throughout the pitch that are game changers. Dundalk have likewise, you know, you point to Michael Duffy, point to, you know, Patrick McElhenney, who was the match winner in last year's final. This is an occasion for big players as well. Like you look at even the past, I was going through the past five finals. It's like the Christy Fagan scoring winners. It's Patrick McElhenney scoring winners. Shawnee Maguire scoring winners. Like these are the lads that you want. Even Kieran Sadlier scoring winning penalties. Like these are the occasions where big players are going to step up. Is it going to be a Jack Byrne? You know, it could be his last match for Rovers. It doesn't seem like it. There's not huge rumours to say, but like I think everyone who's seen him play for Shamrock Rovers this year know how good he is. Could it be the perfect way to sign off for him? Could it be Michael Duffy to do it? Like, I fancy Dundalk to win, but it's going to be very close.
Well, that's not good enough here, frankly, because we're on the you're here to chat, you're here to get us hyped, and you're going to have to make a call on it. Give us the prediction.
Okay, right. So
he's wearing his Dundalk colours.
Yeah.
Do you notice he got a Christy Fagan mention in there and he pats it? No, like just every. I've never been on a podcast with this man where he hasn't snuck in a Christy Fagan mention.
Big Christy Fagan scores big goals, and he doesn't play football anymore, and he still doesn't. I'm going for Dundalk, and I tried to create a bet, but I was desperately afraid that, you know, because it's the FAI Cup final, these games tend to go to extra time. I can't outrightly say that Dundalk are going to win, because if I do that, I'm not going to win. I'm not going to win my bet. So instead, listen, I think Dundalk are going to win. That's my bottom line. But I have a nice little 8.5 to 1 treble. Ooh, yeah, that's I've got to bring a bet to the table, lads. I'm in here.
Dundalk to win with the way on Ladbrokes is just that alone is 27-20.
Yeah, like it's going to be a tight affair. But I'm not quite sure whether. Whether it'll be in the 90 or it'll be after 120 or extra time, it is the FAI Cup final, and there's one thing for certain: I can't say that they're going to do it in 90.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that both teams to score, but specifically in the second half. So both teams to score in the second half. That's 13-5. Then we've got both teams to score in the first half. No, that's 1-8. Nice. Just because I'm pretty sure last year was an anomaly. The teams aren't gonna, both teams aren't gonna score in the first half, and then over 2.5 total goals. That's 27-20.
Nice.
So we got to bring that all together. Now, I just did that as a safety net. I think Dundalk are going to win anyway.
John, I think famine is over. Plucky underdog Shamrock Rovers, the team from little old Dublin.
The little old team that have won 27 leagues or 24 cups and 17 leagues.
They ain't got no history, but they'll take down the mighty powerhouse of North Loud, and the famine will be over.
Well, look at
Rovers.
If you're having any bets, and those Ladbrokes are actually dropping a Euro free bet into everybody's account on Friday, the 1st of November. You can use it on any sport you want, on the FAI Cup finals, on the Rugby World Cup, or whatever it is. But look, there's a couple of tasty suggestions there from Sean. Up next, we're going to chat about 1-2-3. 1-2-3 picks this week, lads. If you've never heard about it before, it's your chance to win €100 cash on Ladbrokes.com by correctly predicting the score of three of the weekend's football games. Last weekend, I came agonisingly close, but I got myself a €5 free bet. If you get one score right, you get a €1 free bet. If you get two, you get a €5 free bet. I had Wolves against Newcastle, finished 1-1. That's exactly what I predicted. I predicted Liverpool to beat Tottenham, albeit I think I said in the podcast that it'd be 2-0 and Tottenham would get a late consolation goal. But it didn't matter what way it happened. It finished
2-1. Yeah.
Sadly, I missed out on, I think it was Chelsea and Burnley. I had that one wrong. Chelsea.
I will say that's the first person to get the €5 free bet. So congratulations on that. We've been doing this for half a season.
For almost half a century. Chelsea are up first this weekend, and I'm going to go to the Chelsea fan in the room to make his prediction for this one. Watford against Chelsea. Sean, who are you going with?
Unsurprisingly going to go for Chelsea, but I think it's just because they've turned the corner, and they keep on turning the corner, and now they're drifting around the corner, and they're on a roll. So I'm going to go with 3-1 Chelsea.
3-1 Chelsea.
Frank's at the wheel. 3-1 Chelsea's not a bad shout, actually. I'm going to go for Watford not to score, and I'll say 3-0.
It's very hard because Watford draw every game.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. Yeah. But I'm going to go, I think 3-0 Chelsea. I'm going 3-0 Chelsea as well.
Okay.
Crystal Palace against Leicester. I've already predicted Leicester to beat them in the big shout. I'm going to say they're going to beat them 2-1.
Okay. You don't think their goal scoring form is going to roll over for the week after, no?
9-0 to Leicester, away from home again. I'm not picking 9-0. I'll jump in on this and think that Palace could upset the Leicester City rampaging machine under Brendan Rodgers and draw this match 1-1. Palace are hard bet. I really do think so. That's not an easy place to go.
Yeah, I wrote down 3-1 Leicester, but I think that Palace are going to be a bit more secure. So I'm going to say 2-1 Leicester. I still think Leicester are going to win.
Same as myself.
I reckon it's going to be closer. It's going to be closer than I imagine.
Then it's a big game. It's a quieter weekend in the Premier League, but it's a big enough game. It's Everton against Tottenham. It's the battle of the perennial team that's finished in the top half of probably every Premier League season in the last 15 years.
The Seamus Coleman debut match.
Was that the Seamus Coleman
debut match? When he came off the bench and changed the game 2-0 down, and he changed the game, they drew 2-2.
It's the Gylfi Sigurdsson derby.
That's right, yeah.
So there we go. Who's going to win it though, Sean?
Neither team are going to win. It's going to be a 2-2 draw.
2-2, I like that.
I don't know what to think of either of these teams.
Two shy teams.
I was thinking about
they're bad.
They're very bad.
They're just bad. But even though Spurs kind of impressed me last week, I thought that they were the hard done by.
And like Harry Kane is just constantly scoring goals, and I keep looking at him going, do I need to get him into my fantasy football team? Because nobody has him, because everyone's like, Spurs are shit. But like,
I have him, but that's because I haven't changed my team since week two.
And then also Everton weren't bad against Brighton. They were just slightly unfortunate, and that penalty that probably shouldn't have been a penalty as well let Brighton back into it. But I don't know. I think I'm still going to go for Spurs to manage to win this one. I think this could be Marco Silva's last game. I've said it.
You've literally taken my 2-1 words
to Spurs. 2-1
to Spurs. I'm going for 1-0 to Spurs, and I think that it's Marco Silva's farewell as well. I thought they'd kind of got it back together, but they won last night, didn't they? But you know, what difference does that make?
They're playing very strong teams in the League Cup as well.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, how, like, you can make it out what you will.
Yeah, exactly. They were kind of making sure they weren't going to fall to another one. I just think that Brighton result was a step too far. And I think then you go, he'll get another chance. He's not going to go. But I think suddenly you lose to Spurs again. It doesn't matter. It's still, it's at Goodison.
Yeah.
If you do that, I think it's going to be chop chop. Mm-hmm.
And then also, you're looking at Arsenal, you're looking at Watford. It could be somebody's last game this weekend. I don't think it actually will be Emery's last game.
Jose Mourinho, I'm hearing rumours.
Yep.
I'm hearing rumours he could be off to Watford.
Arsenal. He's been linked with Everton. He's the favourite to succeed.
It's only a matter of time before Watford sack the manager. He's been there 4 or 5 weeks now at this stage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, still haven't gotten a win.
That's what, as soon as Javi Gracia managed to like last in the end of last season, I went,
has Gracia got a new job yet? Because he could be like, by Christmas he could be on the merry-go-round back at Watford.
Or he could be at Everton. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Marco Silva would be back at Watford. Yeah.
Anyway, lads, if anyone listening thinks they know any better, or indeed if they agree with our scores and they just want to put them in and win themselves €100 cash, which is guaranteed to happen if you go with us, you can get on to Ladbrokes.com right now and play for absolutely free. Sean, thanks very much for coming in. Before we go, we're going to get on to our NFL picks. Mick went 1-2 last week. Can he do any better this week? Mick, it's time for your NFL picks, but before we get on to that, I need to talk to you about my beloved Buffalo Bills, right? I believe they were playing last weekend. That's how diehard of a fan I am now. But you and Donnie had decided that I'm going to follow them for the season. They obviously got off to a great start. Their fans are mad, but I found even another reason for me to fall in love with them. I was listening to David McWilliams' podcast during the week. He was over in Buffalo. And would you believe that Buffalo have the largest collection in their, I think it's in the university or in a museum, I think it's the university, of James Joyce memorabilia or literature, I don't know what you'd call it, his own private letters, his own copy of Ulysses that he wrote it on, the letters from W.B. Yeats ordering it. There's so much.
He wrote Ulysses on the back of a letter that W.B. Yeats wrote.
No, just all this
that's a big book stuff.
Ernie Hemingway looking for it. I believe Dan Brown has an email to him. There's so much shit there that I was like, there's the Irish history in Buffalo, the fact that the Fenian Rebellion in Canada was launched from Buffalo. McWilliams was giving me a sort of a brief history of, or anyone who was listening to it, the brief history of the Irish connections with Buffalo. So I'm all in on the Bills. Okay. I'm going to win the Super Bowl.
Right. They lost to the Eagles of Philadelphia, another place with fine Irish connections last weekend. They're 5-2. That offense is struggling, Mark, I'm not going to lie. I don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. They have a very good chance of making the playoffs, though, because the AFC is just collapsing. Like, it's the Chiefs have been without young Paddy Mahomes now for two games.
Why won't anybody take LeSean McCoy off my hands in fantasy? This is a plea.
Probably because he's not doing anything.
He's
and
doing
loads.
He's doing, he's like, he's getting around 10 points. And like, for a flex position for someone who possibly played, 10 points to me is good. He's never playing for me. He's my fourth choice / fifth choice running back. So yeah, he's never going to get a game. I will trade him to anyone in our league that has a wide receiver that's, they're in the same boat.
I think there's a lot, there's I don't know. I think there's a bit of depth at running back this year. And yeah, I think a lot of people have their starting running backs. You should be able to get like some bye week backup, but you know, he's not outstanding. I couldn't see him being a starter.
Would you
know?
Not say he's like, he's probably 25 to 35?
I don't know, to be honest. Backs. I haven't got my charts in front of me.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
the long running order for this show is
anybody
taking
involved
up all
in
my
the
space.
Ball Study Office Fantasy League is listening in. This is my offer. I will trade you LeSean McCoy for.
There isn't enough trades in our league, I would say.
There's no trades, and there's no talk either. Like, there's no I think they call it on the ESPN side smack talk. There's not enough smack talk. But anyway,
we got to get that sorted. Well, when are we playing each other?
I don't know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, see, we're not paying enough attention. That's our problem. I'm in four feckin' leagues, so it's difficult to know what's happening from one week to another. So last week, Mark, I went 1-2. It was my biggest disappointment as a broadcaster, actually. Never mind as a NFL picker on
as
the Build Up podcast. Yeah, exactly. Well, I've had one or two. We won't go into it. It's a counseling session. Not for today. No, I picked the Colts to beat the spread -5.5. They won with a last second field goal and obviously didn't beat the spread. Not too bad about that. The Colts are, I shouldn't have picked them because they're prone to crazy games that they win or lose by 2 points, right? But I still thought they'd have enough to beat Denver. Grant, not the end of the world. I did have a win, which I don't have in front of me now. Oh, I can't remember who it was. And
that's what you always remember, the defeat.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It was an easy enough one. And I had, then the worst one was I underestimated the San Francisco 49ers. And the reason I'm actually going on about this, because I think it's we should talk about the Niners for a few minutes.
I was about to say, Niners are possible Super Bowl winners.
They absolutely are, and I didn't believe it until this week. So the Panthers played terrible, right? So they were on a good run. They've got their backup quarterback, Kyle Allen, in for Cam Newton, and they've been on a really good run. And look, a really decent team. The team that I thought they were at the start of the year when I talked to you about them on our first show. First time we talked about the NFL on the show. And they went out and they were absolutely hammered. But the Niners were like, oh, they're for real. They're not just on this weird early season run. They're playing Arizona like Thursday night. So by the time a lot of people hear this, they'll have played again. But, you know, they're just someone. They're playing Seattle now, but next week we'll talk about them versus Seattle, because that's going to be a huge, huge game to see if they actually are for real. But a lot of people who have a kind of a half an interest in the NFL will love the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, they're the team from the 80s and the 90s. They've got cool colors. A lot of people go to San Francisco for J1s and different things, and they're always a very, very popular team. And rightly so, they're a class team and they're a class club with a class history. But the biggest thing now is that the Patriots in the AFC are 8-0. The San Francisco 49ers in the NFC are 7-0. They've had their bye week already. The only two undefeated teams in the league. If they were to continue this trajectory and somehow meet in the Super Bowl, it would be Tom Brady against his former backup, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jimmy G, who they traded because Tom wasn't happy with the young guy making noise on the bench beside him. He wanted his future secure. He didn't want to be hoodwinked, usurped.
I remember someone saying Jimmy Garoppolo was the best looking man in a helmet in the world. He's like the Tom Hardy. What Tom Hardy is to acting, Jimmy Garoppolo is to American football helmets. And that's before you look at his talent on the field.
Right, okay. I never noticed a specific... he is obviously a very good-looking man. He is like, you know, almost dreamy, I would say. You know, you can get lost in his eyes. But I never noticed that this is a specific extra bit of handsomeness when you put the helmet on. Normally that will take away from somebody's...
Features are still you can still see them through it.
So that's the interesting one. And obviously I underestimated how handsome Jimmy G was last week. And that's why they beat Carolina by nearly 50 points. This week I hope I've learned my lessons, right? Three picks.
Go on.
By the way, New Orleans Saints are on a bye week. And I had got them 3 weeks in a row with an underestimated spread. And last week I decided I wouldn't, because they were playing against Arizona. And even though they were at home, I thought the spread had finally got big. They beat them 31-9 or something like that, and obviously beat the spread, and I didn't have them. That's annoying, and unfortunately they're on bye week, so remind me to remember that next week, okay? The Seattle Seahawks, disappointing. They won again this week. They were okay. They had lost, obviously, previously when I picked them against Baltimore Ravens, but they're at home against the floundering and, quite frankly, hilarious Tampa Bay Buccaneers this week. They're -6. I like them for it. I think that there's too much chaos going on in Tampa. Like, Jameis Winston, if you watch any of their games, it's just madness. He can throw this like 60-70 yard pass.
Speaking of fantasy football, I have him in my...
Of course you do, yeah. He's 5 interceptions a game at the moment, you know, or something like that. So Mike Evans will make these insane catches for him, and suddenly they'll be back in the game, and then he'll run for a first down, and like, oh my God, Jameis, this is why he was the number one pick a few years ago. And then he'll just throw a crap interception, or he'll fumble, and all. And that just keeps happening, and it's happening too much, and I just don't think they have what it takes to go into Seattle and get a result. So Seattle -6 for that one. Here's one for you then. The Gardner Minshew, the backup quarterback, who's another backup quarterback who's been tearing up trees for the Jacksonville Jaguars. They're hosting Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans this week. The Houston Texans lost their best defensive player, probably the best defensive player in the league, J.J. Watt. People will know him. Big rugby fan, big soccer fan. Yep. He's out for the season, unfortunately.
J.J. Watt seems to spend more time injured than fit.
He's had a lot of injuries, but yeah, like he actually seems to go down on kind of like week 8 a lot, yeah, and then be gone for the year. But God, he was playing well as well. So that's a really tough one for them. However, I still think their offense, Watson is just a winner. They did it against Oakland this week where he got poked in the eye, or he got a boot in the eye.
Boot in the head and you're not looking at it.
In the middle of a play, Mark, right, to win the game, they're losing to the Raiders, right? A boot comes up, a stray boot comes up, kicks Watson in the eye. He, while with the ball in his right hand, he covers his left eye with his hand and throws the ball on the run into the end zone for the game-winning touchdown. This guy is a star. He's class. Yeah. And I think, again, in a close game, he's probably just going to do enough to beat the Jags on the road. They're minus 1.5, so you figure they win the game. Chances are they'll win it by more than a point. So I like them for that.
Hopkins
and
also on fire.
He's starting to play really well as well. They've done what they can do to what they were doing. So DeAndre Hopkins is one of the best receivers in the whole NFL. But they've been they were really struggling early on in the year to get him into games because he's been double marked and double covered. But this now they've been bringing him short and giving him kind of like the ball close to the line of scrimmage and then he'll get yards after the catch. Really clever stuff. So he's back on fire again. Lastly then, the LA Chargers, who actually won this week because the Bears are even more of a farce than they are.
Every team in the NFL seems to either be going really well or a farce.
Well, the Bears, like, who were supposed to be really good this year, have been a disaster, and their quarterback Trubisky's crap. Oh my god, it's just so bad. But they had real issues with field goal kickers for the last couple of years, and I think they tried it. I think they had like 6 guys signed this summer. Anyway, they missed the field goal to win the game against the Chargers this week. So this other guy is probably gone now. They'll probably have somebody else in. But they're going up. The Chargers did win that, but they've been finding ways to lose games, and they're home in LA in the small soccer stadium that hosts only 35,000 people to the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers is back. That's kind of all I have to say about the Packers. They look like full-on real deal again. They beat the Chiefs last week. He's playing outstanding. They should have their best receiver, Davante Adams, back. Also, the Chargers don't really have a home field advantage because they don't really have any fans in LA or from San Diego. And generally, the Packers, who are one of those like really well-supported teams, anyone like that, like the Steelers or the Packers or anyone like that, will bring in 80% of the crowd. So it'll be like a home game for them. They're -3.5. How do you like that?
I like it a lot.
Okay. Seattle Seahawks -6 against the Buccaneers. Houston Texans -1.5 at the Jags. And the Green Bay Packers -3.5 at the Chargers.
There you go. Just before we go as well, a brief word on the NBA. You all laughed at me last week when I said that the Raptors were going to retain their title. I don't think it went that far. I said, have they any hope? And he's all just scoffed. 3-1 now. I'm calling it.
Yeah.
I'm calling it. Siakam's filling the void of Kawhi.
Who did they lose to?
They lost to the Celtics.
The Celtics. And the Celtics, did I say they were underestimated?
Yeah.
I did forget that they lost Al Horford, actually, when I was talking about that it was just a straight-in Kemba for, what's his name? I've already forgotten him. Kyrie. But we also lost Al Horford. But Celtics, sneaky. Sneaky.
Cool. Well, look, if you're having any bets this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net for more information. That is all we have time for. There's been so much on this show. You can subscribe by searching The Build Up on balls.ie on all good podcast apps. If you're already a subscriber, please do rate and review the show. We'd love a 5-star rating, and if you can leave a review, that'll be brilliant. It'll mean an awful lot to us. But until next week, mind yourself.